Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, welcome to Ranks FC, and that is another year in the books for us. Thank you all so much for your loyal support on this podcast across the entire year. Whether you just listen here, whether you also listen on Patreon, whether you're new to the podcast, whether you've been listening since the BR days, thank you to every single one of you that tunes in. We hope you've all had a great 2025 and are looking forward to 2026. Jack is away traveling. It's honeymoon time for him. So today you've got me, but thankfully I'm joined by you, the Rank Squad, for a special hot takes episode to carry us into 2026 and come up with some bold predictions, some bold statements on what we've seen in 2025 and what we might get out of 2026. Thank you to everybody that's contributed to these over on the Patreon. I asked the other day for some ideas for this. People didn't really realize at the time that it was going on the main episodes, but that's what it's become today, as I do a solo show here on Ranks FC. These are few and far between. You don't usually just get me on the mic, but hopefully you bear with me over the next hour because we've got some fun stuff coming up across the course of this show and some really bold takes from you guys. So this is going to be a fun one. Before we get stuck into the main segment with all of the hot takes in it, and yeah, as I say, I promise you there are some really good ones for you to look forward to that will have you chuckling along, or perhaps making you a bit angry. I don't know, it depends who you support. I just wanted to quickly address what we probably would have done if Jack was around today, which would have been to have a look at some of the best things about 2025. And in particular, I think we would have done an award show of some sort. We talked about doing a show and probably leading it on our best player of 2025, or maybe our favourite player of 2025. And if we'd have had that discussion, I think we'd have talked about Ousmane Dembele, obviously. We'd have talked about Kylian Mbappe, Lamine Yamal. I think Rafinha would have come into the conversation, Vitinha. Dom Szoboszlai might have even made his way into the conversation, given the impact that he's been making at Liverpool. But when we'd mentioned it, I was going to pick Harry Kane. And so today, as a hot take, I'm going to say that the best player of 2025 was Harry Kane. He's had the best year anyway in my book. And I mean, from any standpoint, really, Kane's just been sensational. And I'm delighted for him that he was able to get a club trophy under his belt. Okay, if he'd have stayed at Tottenham, he'd have won the Europa League, fair enough. But he went to Germany, he played for Bayern Munich, and he won the Bundesliga. And that was so good for him. His curse was broken. And it was almost 700 games he'd played in club football before he got his hands on a proper trophy that wasn't a personal accolade. And you could see it meant the world to him. He was dancing around on the turf at the Allianz with the trophy. He was covered in beer. He was soaked. His teammates, you know, poured the beer all over him and his boss, Vincent Kompany. I think those two have teamed up pretty well. But Kane's general form has just been absolutely sensational. We've seen the stats of 100 goal involvements across the year. He's got, like, what, 60 goals or something across the year. For club and country, he's just been marvellous. And finally, I think he's getting the recognition and the respect that he deserves. You know, obviously, we've known from an England perspective how important Harry Kane was in getting England to major tournaments, scoring goals that would get us into the latter stages of tournaments. But now we've seen him do it for Bayern on a big stage. And the rate at which he's been scoring is crazy. But his performance levels have just been brilliant as well. You know, we've seen him changing his game, dropping deeper, bringing others into play. Some of the compilations that we've been seeing are just unbelievable. The way he's striking a ball, the way he's switching play, the way he's finding passes. it's been remarkable. And I think that Kane deserves so, so much praise for the way that he's come through this year, on top, as far as I'm concerned. I think it's been so important for this time in Germany to go well for him. And I think it's gone even better than he could have imagined. I mean, Bayern have had some great strikers through the years, but you're looking at a time now where he might break like Lewandowski records in across a season and things like that. That's how well things have gone for Harry Kane. Winning that trophy was his personal favourite moment too. He says, winning his first trophy, a team trophy, was an amazing feeling. Great to get it over the line. And he had some special celebrations. And it helps motivate him to achieve more things to come further in his career. But yeah, just generally, there's just nothing he can't do. Like, his penalty record's great. He bags hat-tricks. As I say, connects play. He's got an unbelievable long-range pass on him. The way that he can play those flat, spinning balls across the field are just unbelievable. He scores against pretty much anyone he faces. There's no type of team that he doesn't score against. It's just been a brilliant, brilliant 2025 for Harry Kane. So it was time for me really to hand him his flowers. And I just wanted to really address as well, like, my favourite football experience from a personal perspective of 2025, which, because obviously this has been different for me, right? Like, I'm in San Diego and it's different. And I'm in MLS world, right? So this has been my first full season of following MLS. And in particular, I've had a season ticket at San Diego FC, and I honestly can't encourage you all enough to just go and watch football wherever it is. Because if I took the stance that a lot of English people would take of MLS, I wouldn't have bothered going along. I've always obviously watched MLS anyway, because, like, I love football, but from Bleacher Report, I became more entwined in MLS, and I followed LAFC when their team was formed. And so I'd been watching them for a few years leading into me moving over here. And then obviously San Diego FC was launched, and this was their first season. So since February, I've been going. And it's been brilliant. Like, the community that's been built around it is great. The culture around it is great. And the team has been absolutely sensational. You know, I'm watching players here that I'd never heard of. I'd never heard of Anders Dreyer. I'd never heard of Tverskov. I'd never heard of Oni Velakari. I had heard of Thomas Engel because his dad's famous, but I'd never seen him play. I knew about Chucky Lozano. Fine. I knew about Luca Della Torre. Fine. But honestly, just generally, like, it's just been great to be part of a new club. Because obviously, I've been going to watch Fulham for a long, long time. I had a season ticket at Fulham. And I've loved being part of that supporter set. And you become part of the club, especially at a club like Fulham, that's a smaller Premier League team. If you support one of the giant clubs, I don't think you can feel as part of it. But when you're at Fulham and you've got like 20 to 30,000 fans of your own, like, I don't know what the diehard Fulham crowd would be now. If we got relegated to the Championship, we'd probably be down to about 20,000 attendances. And I'd count myself as one of those 20,000 if I was in England. But, you know, a lot of the teams have hundreds of thousands, millions of fans. So at San Diego FC, managed to find a new community, and they delivered on the pitch as well. They got through to the Western Conference final. My kids have been coming along. My youngest, Reese, wasn't interested in football at all. He used to step over a football if it was in his way. But now he's been started coming to San Diego FC. He's got the bug. He's got the kit. He loves it. He tears around the living room, pretending he's Anders Dreyer. Yeah, it's been brilliant. So I just wanted to, yeah, give some love to MLS. But I do this all the time. I do it more on Patreon than I do on the main pod. But go and watch your local team. Like, you can still support whoever you support, But to be part of a club and to be there in life throughout a season, watching the ups and downs of a team and getting to know new players who don't necessarily have to be household names, is something very special. And it's and you get to know other people, you make friends, you get your friends involved with it. That is what, for me, football's all about. And I'll always have that in my life. No matter where I live, I'll always go and watch a team that I live nearby. So whether it's San Diego FC, whether it's Walton and Hersham, whether it's Fulham, whoever. And I suggest that you guys do that too, because it will give you an even more fulfilling 2026 if you're watching more football and you feel part of the experience. Right, I'm going to be back in part two with some proper hot takes from you, the Rank Squad. Welcome back to Ranks FC, and now we are going to get stuck into our hot takes from the patrons. Thanks to everybody who contributed to this. Couldn't go through all of them because we had a good amount come in over on Patreon. As I say, please do come and join us if you can over there. It's a great community and a lot of involvement from you guys. But yeah, there's some good ones in here. So I think you are going to have some fun chuckling along, or perhaps even shouting at your phones as you listen along. Because this first hot take from Eric isn't going to go down, I don't think, very well with Arsenal fans. Eric says, Saka is not that good. 3 open play goals in the Prem for the whole of 2025. He's a dribble and limp off merchant. A dribble and limp off merchant. Eric, this is a steaming hot take, saying that Bukayo Saka is not very good. 24 years old, regarded as one of the best, most exciting wingers in the game. Probably a starter for England at the World Cup in the US in the summer. And I think, look, I understand your point here. Like, his output hasn't been perhaps what you would expect it to be from Bukayo Saka. But I think that there are things that we need to take into account here along the way. Most seriously, the injuries that he suffered, right? Like, his hamstrings have been playing him up, man. Obviously, since last December, Saka's been struggling. He missed a lot of games at the start of the year. And then the first 2 months of this season, he was out with more problems with his hamstrings. So in total, he'd missed 20-odd games across the course of 2025 with muscular injury. And that's definitely impacted the way things have gone for him. And this season, I feel that his output, since he came back into the team, has been hampered by the fact that Victor Gyökeres doesn't finish off his chances. I mean, you watch Saka closely, and I'm not saying he's in the tip-top form, but he's in decent form. And he's put so many balls into danger areas, and Gyökeres is a yard or two behind. And it's driving me mad as a neutral at times. I mean, if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be like, you are a number 9, get in there. So it'll be interesting. Once Arsenal have their full forward line available, once Havertz is coming available now, of course, as well, and Gabby Jesus is back in there, Mikel Moreno can always fill in. I just feel like Saka's been a little bit let down by Gyökeres on the assist count. And in terms of the goals, he's come close. But I take your point. He does need to improve his output from open play with goals. Obviously, he's half on pens. He's sharing them, it seems, with Gyökeres at the moment. He'll be on free kicks and corners. But Saka is not that good. Doesn't really stick with me. Is he super elite? I think there's a slight conversation to be had over that. Is he one of the best players in the Premier League right now? I think you've got a point. But Eric, saying Saka is not that good, come on. Can't be doing that. We've got a couple of good Arsenal takes actually here. The next one comes in from Jared. He says, Havertz comes back for Arsenal and finishes as the team's top goal scorer this season. I like it. I quite like this. I mean, when you look at the output so far in the Premier League this season, as I say, like, Gyökeres, it's been disappointing. As I'm recording this, and I'm recording it ahead of the latest batch of game week 19 matches, when Arsenal are due up against Aston Villa. So before that game, Gyökeres has played 16 games and he's got 5 Premier League goals. Behind him, on 4 goals, you've got Saka, Trossard and Eze. So that's where you're at right now. So you're thinking, okay, Havertz coming back into the fold. Of course there's potential that he can actually end the season as Arsenal's top goal scorer. He himself has obviously been struggling with injuries, and that was the case last season as well. So last season in the Prem, Havertz got 9 goals. But when you consider that from February onwards, Havertz was actually out with a hamstring injury of his own, all of his goals came up until February 2nd. So he scored his first one, opening day of the season against Wolves last year, August 17. And then he scored his 9th goal of the season in the Premier League against Man City on the 2nd of Feb. So that tells me that in the next 5 months, if he can put a run together, then yeah, Havertz can end the season as Arsenal's top goal scorer, particularly in the Premier League. So I like it. I don't think it's as hot as it sounds. I don't think it's that extreme. Kai Havertz can definitely end this season as their top goal scorer. Love that, Jared. Well done, mate. But this next one from Najib. He says, Arsenal is too big for Eze. And unfortunately, he will be sold in the summer. I mean, I wanted hot takes. I asked you to be outlandish, and this is really outlandish. Too big for Eze, the team he's dreamed of playing for. Team he bagged a hat-trick for recently. And then just been bought and will be sold a year after being purchased. I mean, I cannot for the life of me see this. Arsenal have massive plans for Eze. They really rate him. I accept that I don't know what his defined role is going to be in the team and whether he can make it his own in this Arsenal squad. But also, I don't think that that matters because they're going to have so many games that Eze's going to get plenty of chances. I don't think Arsenal's too big for him. I don't. He's got big ambitions in the Champions League and in international football. And obviously in the Premier League, he wants to be part of a title-winning team this season. And if Eze helps Arsenal lift that trophy in May, they're not going to be selling him. And where's he going to go? I've always had some doubts about how Eze would elevate his levels from being the star man at Crystal Palace. But I do believe that he has the professionalism, the commitment, and the continued potential to make sure that he stays in the mix at Arsenal. So, sorry, Najib, I'm not having it, mate. Arsenal and Eze, I think, fit together well. But yeah, very good. Nice little Arsenal roundup there. Let's move on because we've got a few big Aston Villa takes as well. And Stuart says, Unai Emery is the best manager in the league right now. Every single time you watch Aston Villa, you see the exact tactical plan within 5 minutes. And then he's consistently making the right changes and the right subs to win games. I think we saw a good example of that, didn't we, the other day in the Chelsea game. Villa not really in the match in the first half. Chelsea on top, could only score the one goal, didn't make the most of their swings of momentum in their favour, Chelsea. And then there was no way in the second half of that game Aston Villa were going to play in the same way or be allowed to play in the same way. Emery starts making tweaks, then brings Ollie Watkins in and things like that. And I think he is managing this team really well, Stuart. I totally agree. And I think that this was the vision that Aston Villa had all along. I remember reading a piece from a friend of mine who works in the Telegraph, John Percy. And he wrote a while ago now about how Unai Emery, when he came into the Aston Villa job, his first week, he made all the players sit down and he had this big presentation for them all. And he explained exactly how he was going to get this club back to where they should be. and it didn't take long for his changes to start being visible. He ultimately wanted Aston Villa not just back in the European equation, but he felt it was possible to even get beyond that and maybe not win a title, but at least be in that conversation. I can't believe it, but he's actually done it this season. So Emery's turned things around very quickly, very well. And the thing that Villa have to their benefit with Emery in charge is that they have a guy who they're willing to give a lot of control to. So it's not just that he is allowed to pick the team and train the team, but he gets to have a deeper say in the transfers, in the philosophies. And I think that that's something a lot of head coaches and managers don't have anymore. And I think that after the Steven Gerrard failure at Aston Villa, it was important that they got in a proven, proper coach who had done it. And Emery's been a masterstroke in that sense. So I agree that in in-game management, Emery is right up there. And there have been times this season, obviously, when Aston Villa haven't been setting the world alight, yet they've been ticking off these wins, going on this unbelievable run. And Emery is just a master at one-on-one player management, at bringing a team together, at making ruthless decisions, giving players a chance. We've seen with like Rashford and Sancho and players like that, like they can be a place where you could reignite your career. And I think we'll still see Villa continue to do that more. But more than that, among all the analysis and the deep thinking that he does, he's able to, in live play, implement changes so that they can stay within reach of winning a match. The best manager in the league right now, I think he's better than Arteta. I do. I mean, Arteta's doing a better job at Arsenal than Emery did, sure. But if I was to choose, if I was setting up a new team and I was told I could have Arteta or Emery as manager, I'd go Emery. Would I go Emery over Guardiola? No. Would I go Emery over pretty much every other manager in the league? I think so, yeah. So I'd say that Emery's probably the second best manager in the league. The best manager right now, maybe, yeah, because he's got Villa punching above their weight and they are competing with Pep Guardiola's Man City to challenge Arsenal for the Premier League title. So nice one, Stuart. That was a good one. Zach says Aston Villa have the best travelling fans in the Prem. The best fans in the Prem, Zach. You're in a laugh, aren't you? He says, I was at Villa Chelsea over the weekend and I couldn't believe the sound coming from the Villa end, even when they were losing. Look, I wasn't at the game, Zach, so I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt on that one. And I know that Villa fans can be extremely loud and they are very vocal support. They've got a big support. Villa are a great club. Like, I'm not going to argue that. But Villa are also one of the flakiest clubs in the Prem, in my opinion. And I can tell you that from experience of going to Premier League games through the last 20 years as a reporter, there have been plenty of times when the going wasn't good, when I wouldn't say that Villa had the best fans in the Prem or the best travelling fans in the Prem. For starters, when things start to go bad, that Villa Park was had a few empty seats, let's put it that way. I remember seeing that. Their travelling fans are good. I don't think they're the best in the Prem. I don't think I'm going to go as far as saying that Villa are the loudest away fans in the Prem. Who would I put up there? Look, one thing I will say is that it's really hard to gauge away support because, like, if you're a Northern team or a Midlands team and you come down to a London away game, then they've always got a contingent of fans in that area of the ground anyway. As if you're a team from the south, the chances are you haven't got many fans, particularly if you're a smaller club. Like say you're Fulham or Palace. You're not going to have many fans that live in around Sunderland and Newcastle. So you've literally got away support travelling from hundreds of miles away to be there that day. I don't think that's the case with other fans from up north when they come to London, because so many people live in London and support these teams, right? And they've just moved down for their work or whatever. So I think that needs to be taken into account. I would say Liverpool, Leeds, I think Man United have good away support. Tottenham have good away support. They all jump to my mind straight away, that little lot. They're the ones that come to my mind. So Aston Villa fans are passionate for sure. They are loyal to a degree. At the moment, I'm sure they did sound good, mate, because they are competing for the title. If Villa fans weren't loud at the moment, then they're never going to be. So I'll give you that Villa have a good away support. I'm not having the Villa fans have the best travelling away fans in the country. Do you know what? We should do a whole episode ranking the away support of every team in the Premier League. I'll need Jack for that one for sure, because I'd need him in the mix for up-to-date experiences that he's had of travelling around to games as well. So let's keep that one in mind. Nice one, Zach, though, for getting in touch with it. We've still got another Aston Villa one to come here, and it's from Dom. And Dom says, Morgan Rogers is a top 20 player in the world and has been for a year. It's just because he doesn't play for a super club that he hasn't been regarded that way. Top 20 player in the world. That is out there, isn't it? That is out there. So let's just remind ourselves of some other players who have had a very good 2025. And you're looking at Scott McTominay, Michael Olise, Vinny Jr., Jean Neves, Victor Gyökeres, Donnarumma, Lewandowski, Pedri, Cole Palmer, Harry Kane, Nuno Mendes, Kvaratskhelia, Desiree Doué, Achraf Hakimi, Kylian Mbappe, Mohamed Salah, Rafinha, Vitinha, Lamine Yamal, and Ousmane Dembele. So that's a top 20 just I've rattled off just by looking at a quick list of Ballon d'Or contenders for this year, and a top 20 list that I've just stolen straight off goal.com. But that's the sort of competition, that's the sort of company that Morgan Rogers would be keeping if he was a top 20 player in the world. Is it a fair assessment? He's not far off it, is he? He's not far off it. He has been absolutely integral to Villa putting themselves in this title frame, right? This run of incredible form that they've had, which, as I'm recording this, is a winning run of 10 games in all comps. Their best form as a club since 1914. Right? Rodgers scoring goals, scoring spectacular goals, working relentlessly on his technique, on his mindset. He talks himself about he's in the best form of his career, but he's also in the most confident mood he's ever been in. Since the start of last season, he's got 20-odd goals across all competitions, right? He's 23 years old. Unai Emery talks of him glowingly as a catalyst for the team, as somebody who fights for the team, who works hard. He's constantly striving to get better. He might end up as Aston Villa's top goal scorer this season, right? He's a serious, serious footballer who might even be an England starter for the World Cup, right? You give this player time and he genuinely will be one of the top players in the world. Obviously, like, there were interest from other clubs in getting him out of Aston Villa in the summer, and Villa couldn't fathom it. They were like, that's the last player you're having. You can have Ollie Watkins, but you can't have Morgan Rogers. He is just buzzing. And Aston Villa absolutely love him. Unai Emery adores him. And from what we've been seeing so far, as I say, I think that no matter what Foden does, no matter what Cole Palmer does, Morgan Rogers will be England's number 10, won't he? There's a hot take, isn't it? Morgan Rogers starts the World Cup as England's number 10. I think it has to be considered. But look, Villa have had a big turnaround this season. They started the season, couldn't score a goal. Everyone had to stay calm in those moments because it was important they gave the boss and the team time to turn things around. And I do think Rodgers has been a catalyst towards it. A top 20 player in the world, according to Dom. Nice one, mate. That was a good take. Okay, let's move on beyond Aston Villa. I've got some random ones now, kind of. We'll start with Man United, who Tom says United will finish fifth in the table. Above Villa, oh, I mean, that's a hot take, with Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal and City in the top four in that ascending order. I mean, the hot take there is that Aston Villa don't make the top five, Tom. That is a hot take. To say that this United team finishes above Villa would take some doing. Look, I think I said at the start of the season in our preview shows that I do think that United will make the top five. I might have even gone as far to say I think United make top four. But certainly I thought they would be in that the conversation when a lot of people refused to accept it. Then United obviously had a blip and I had a shaky time, but I did stick by them. And I think that we're seeing now that while they won't be consistent, you don't have to be this season because nobody really is. And they can definitely cement themselves in the top five. I don't know that Aston Villa don't make the top five, Tom. I mean, that would be pretty poor on the back of what we've seen so far. But I guess United are helped by the fact that they don't have European football this season. They have to make the most of that. Like next season, the likelihood is United do have European football. That's why they're trying to strengthen their squad. They're trying to get more depth here. And yeah, that will prove key. So that is a hot take, certainly, to say United will be finishing above Aston Villa this season. Another United take from Hamza. He says, if Kobbie Mainoo played for Arsenal, City or Liverpool, no one would go after the managers in the same way for not starting him. So he's saying that the reason that there's so much conversation around Kobbie Mainoo is because it's Amorim and it's because of his decision making. Not that Kobbie Mainoo deserves to be in the team necessarily, but that it's just this particular situation. Kobbie Mainoo playing for Arsenal, City or Liverpool, would he deserve to be in any of those teams? I think that's the question, Hamza. Like, you know, you compare a Man United's midfield to Liverpool's, Arsenal's and City's. So no one would go after their managers in the same way for not starting him because he wouldn't deserve to be in that team. Like, Kobbie Mainoo's not at the level of those three teams at the moment. But he is at a level, in my opinion, that he should be in the Man United team. Like, Kobbie Mainoo is a victim of his own success early on in his teenage years. He broke through for Man United, made an unbelievable impact, but then Ruben Amorim came in, changed the setup, decided that Mainoo didn't fit specifically enough the roles that he wanted, didn't trust him, left him out. Kobbie Mainoo suffers a bit of a confidence crisis, struggles to hit his best levels in training. Amorim continues to not pick him. Mainoo begins to wonder what's going on, asks if he could leave. Man United say no. Now he's stuck. He says he's in competition with Bruno Fernandes for a place. Fernandes never misses a game because he's the captain and his favourite player. Fernandes gets injured. Kobbie Mainoo gets injured at the same time. He can't prove himself. So what's Kobbie Mainoo supposed to do? Of course he wants to leave in January. Of course he does, because he's playing for one of the worst Man United teams we've ever seen. Okay, they're getting better. Okay, we're starting to see something. But Kobbie Mainoo will believe that if he can't get into this version of Man United, when's he going to get in? Now, Man United don't like Kobbie Mainoo's attitude towards this. From what I'm told, they wanted to see a more patient approach from him. And they felt that he needed to see the bigger picture. That Casemiro's coming towards the end. Bruno will be leaving. Agate will probably leave. But they were like, stay with us because you'll be part of it. And he's thinking, well, how do I know that? Because you never pick me. You never pick me. And sometimes you put an Agate before me. A few months ago, everyone thought Casemiro couldn't run. He plays every game. So where are you going to play me? And why will I sign a new contract? Because my contract's starting to wind down. If I went and played for Napoli or even if I played for Chelsea, I'd see more minutes than I see here at Old Trafford. So, yeah, Hamza, I don't think that people would go after Arteta or Guardiola or Slot for not playing Kobbie Mainoo because I think they've all got better midfielders to pick from. I think that Mainoo at least deserved a better chance to make an impact than he's actually got at United this season. And I think that people have judged him too harshly. He's a 20-year-old lad who needs time to make sure he can make his impact. And he's going to have tough times. You've got to support him through it, not just leave him sat on the bench. That's my opinion anyway. All right, Ben Williams says, if Spurs stick with Thomas Frank, we will be Champions League regulars again in a few years. A few years, mate. You can't... They ain't going to stick by him if they're waiting for Champions League football in a for a few years. Like, they're in the Champions... Like, they got back in that European picture now. So, they got to stay in the picture. And if they don't qualify for the Champions League this season, they have to get there next season, because that's the demands of the football club in the modern stadium, and the amount of money I think that Tottenham are about to put into this team is going to be significant. Like, they're going to go on a bit of a spending spree over the next two transfer windows. That's why they're getting rid of people like Brennan Johnson, so they can replace them with better players. So they are sticking with Thomas Frank right now. But that's not, I don't think, with a few years' time in mind as regulars. I mean, maybe you mean that they are regulars from here to a few years' time, in which case, yeah, you're right. But I don't think they would be patient with Thomas Frank not making it now and then becoming regulars in 3 years' time. I don't see that. Akko also has a hot take on Tottenham. He says Spurs will win a Prem before United. What do you think? The Spurs win the Premier League before Man United win the Premier League? Are either of these teams going to win the Premier League again in our lifetime? I say again, Tottenham never won the Premier League. But are Tottenham going to win a Premier League before Man United? I don't think so. I don't think so. I struggle to see a day in, I don't know, certainly the next 10 years where Tottenham are Premier League champions. But I have just said that they've got a level of ambition that is new. In the post-Daniel Levy era, I think they'll spend more money. I think they'll take more risk. But I just worry about the mentality of the club and whether they can do it. And I do think that their stadium can be a bit too vitriolic at times. Recently, they have supported the team well. I will say that because I'm harsh on Tottenham. Anyone that listens to our shows over on the Patreon will know that I'm always like, it's hard to be Tottenham because as soon as you go behind, that place is turning on you at the moment because they don't like all their players and they don't really trust this manager. But I have noticed the last couple of games, they've been a bit more supportive. Home and away, actually. And I think that's what you have to do. You have to support your team through tough times. The whole point of being a supporter. You're supporting them. You've got to be there through the tough times. I don't know when Spurs or United are going to win in the Premier League, though. Like, Man United aren't close to winning it either, so... We might be talking about 15 years' time here. I don't know. It's a good shout, though. Let's move on. Valentine says, Daniel Farke will not get sacked this season and Leeds will be sacked weeks before the end of the season. Yeah, I think I agree with you now. There was a shaky spell a few weeks back, but even then, Leeds were going to stick with Daniel Farke because... They felt if there was any blame to be had, it was perhaps on the board for not spending a bit more money or at least for not giving him another forward option, another goal scorer. But obviously since then, Dominic Calvert-Lewin came into a runner's a good form. He's been banging him in. If he continues that, then they'll be fine. Farker's like had to ride a couple of waves at Leeds, but he's still there. He's still got his head above water. And I think you're right. I quite fancy Leeds to stay up now, and I think it's exciting that this is the situation that we've got ourselves into. Right, last couple. And again, these two are really hard for me to quickly debate on this show, because one, I'd want to bounce these off of Jack, and two, I think they could make episodes of their own. So I'll leave these for you guys to ponder before we get to part three. Jonah says Christian Pulisic is a top five winger in the world on current form. I think that end bit is key. On current form, I think you're right. On current form, I think you're right. Is he one of the top five in the world generally? I don't know. But for the way that he's been performing, then yeah, I'd probably say it. But again, I'd love to do I want to get stuck into more of these sorts of episodes in the new year, ranking positions a bit more. And let's see if we can come up with some categories to do that. And definitely Pulisic, especially because we've got so many of you in the US. I know I'd be interested to know where we rank Pulisic. Maybe that's one that we drag Sam back into, actually. We need to get Sam Tye on this pod more, don't we? Involved with me and Jack. So maybe that's one for him. Or I'll wander around San Diego and do a bit of a vox pop and go around to see what people here think of Christian Pulisic and just how good they think he is. And the final one is from Finn, and he says, Bart Verbruggen at Brighton is a top five goalkeeper in the world. I guess it depends like how you would gauge that, wouldn't it? Like, I think for your team, like if you were to make a goalkeeper signing now, right now, would you want it to be Verbruggen? Look, Tottenham are genuinely looking at this. They are thinking he could be the answer for them. But yeah. Is he the top five in the world right now? I don't know. I think he definitely has the potential to be. But when you're comparing him to, if you're talking about worldwide, the best of the best, and you're talking about Courtois and Donnarumma and Alisson and Mike Maignan and David Raya, Jan Oblak, who have I not mentioned? Martinez at Villa, like maybe even Ter Stegen still, I don't know. I don't know if Verbruggen's top five quite yet. He's going to be though, that's my opinion. I think that Verbruggen's going to be. So that was a pretty good take, Finn. And again, maybe we do a goal. I know I've been harsh on goalkeepers, haven't I, many times across the years on Ranks. But maybe we do need a goalkeeping expert to come on and tell us just exactly where Verbruggen does rank in the global rankings right now. Thanks for hanging with us for the second part. I will be back after the break with the last section of today's episode of Ranks FC. Welcome to part three of Ranks FC. It's the Dean Solo show that you've been listening to today to round off 2025 and take us into 2026 as Jack travels around the world. Honestly, that lad deserves the break, by the way. Congrats to Jack on a great 2025. He's smashed it on work-wise, on a personal level. He's had a great year, and we're very proud of him here on Rank. So, Jack, it's very, very rare that he's not on a pod. Even when he goes on holiday, he'll usually find time to record. But this time, no. He's enjoying himself. He's enjoying himself, and I'm very pleased for him and Lucy that they get this time together. And Rio looked absolutely amazing from the pictures that I've seen so far. Listen, we're going to round off this episode of Hot Takes by getting stuck into three that were left over. As I say, sorry if I didn't get stuck into yours today and you put one on the Patreon. There is a chance that we'll come back to them, either to be addressed on the Patreon show itself or to maybe be turned into another episode of the main Ranks FC. So don't fret, you might still make it, and it doesn't matter anyway because all the other patrons would have read what you wrote and would have thought about it, and your thoughts are always welcome and appreciated. So listen, these ones are a bit different because they're not club specific. We got Nick. Now Nick says, shouldn't the offside rule be like the goal line technology rule? So If a part of you is not offside, then you are not offside. Just like the whole ball has to cross the line. So I think we're talking about the daylight rule here, Nick. We're talking about the fact that there should be clear daylight in between the attacker and the last defender for you to be deemed offside. And there's been a long time argument that this should be the case. And we need to remember that we are taking away some entertainment here by bringing in these silly VAR rules and like, oh, he was offside because his elbow was off or his knee was off. It's such fine margins. The offside rule was originally brought into football to stop goal hanging. Because when football first started, you would obviously just get someone playing like playground football and you're just going to like hang around near the goal. We've all seen goal hangers, right? They just hang around near the goal and they wait for the tap-in. I'm literally getting flashbacks to being like 10 years old right now as I think about goal hangers and being on the playground, and it's all the hustle and bustle. People are challenging for the ball and then it runs free. And there's always the lad that just hangs around near the goal, chats to his mate for a bit, and then just sticks it in the back of the net. Not sticks it in the back of the net, sticks it straight through the gap because we didn't used to have nets. We used to have literal jumpers for goalposts. Don't know if you guys still do that if you go to school. Anyway, the aim, like in bringing in an offside, was just to prevent that. It just meant that, like, you had to stay in touch with the play, be in a position that was fair to everybody. But it wasn't to punish you for, like, being yeah, the tiniest bits that your armpit was a centimetre ahead of where the defender is. And I see some VAR decisions these days, and I'm honestly just wanting to throw stuff at the TV. I think what we need is exactly what's being talked about here. If any part of the attacker is level with the defender, then you're on the side. I agree. I think in order to have the free-flowing game that we all want and more goals, which we all want, let's change the offside rule. Let's do it. Let's not have this VAR nonsense of scrutinising whether somebody really was onside or not by 1 centimetre. Because it doesn't matter, because as a defender, you've got lucky in that instance. You haven't played him offside if, like, his knees just veered off. He's just like, his run's not even badly timed. It's just that his body's a slight different shape in that moment than the defender's was. Because the defender might have just been about to put his leg back. But if the ball's played and they're just in a slightly different period of their movement, then the forward looks like he's offside. But sometimes he's not even. I'm just fed up. Like, obviously, like, when I played, I was an attacker myself, so I hate this anyway. Because the attacker's always the one that's penalised. And I just always liked giving the advantage to the attacker. I just think it makes for a better game. I'm in this for goals, not nil-nils. I think it would also reduce the amount of VAR controversy. I think that people would be happier with it. I think there would be less decisions to actually make, because I think it would be clearer on first look. I think it would also be good because you'd get attackers willing to gamble a bit more. So I think they'd be willing to make more daring runs. I think it would be way better than sitting here for 4 minutes watching a computer draw a line and zoom in. It's like watching a PowerPoint presentation sometimes. Let's get goals back into football and let's get these diagrams off of my TV. I like that one and I'm glad it came up, Nick, because as you can tell, probably, I'm pretty passionate about that one. It's a hot take, but it's a hot take that needs to be brought into football. The offside rule needs to be changed. Okay, let's move on. This is Clack. And now Clack's one, I guess, is a bit club-oriented. And you should probably know that Clack, from the Patreon, is a West Ham fan. He says, and this is definitely his words, not mine, that the majority of fans in stadiums in England are overly entitled brain-dead freaks who should have no influence over how a club is run. I miss David Moyes and I hate the fans who pushed him out. Okay, yeah. Look, I don't think that any of you are freaks. Let's put it that way. But I understand the sentiment here because West Ham in particular has become very vitriolic, very divided, and they did force David Moyes out at a time when it was probably silly to do so. I don't believe in the he's taken them as far as he can saying. I've got fed up with this recently, seeing it on Fulham channels. In the last 2 months, people say, oh, get rid of Marcus Silva, take it as far as he can, don't renew his contract. What nonsense. Fulham are now in the top half of the table, picking up a couple of good wins, and he's fine. You've got to know your levels. You've got to know like where you sit in the football food chain. And as a Fulham fan, I'm very aware of where Fulham are, and I'm happy to be in the Premier League, and I'd love us to just be challenging in the top half. All right? And if we're in the relegation battle, then so be it, because we're Fulham. We're not a big club. I expect relegation battles at times, and we're going to go down again at some point. But we've stayed in the Premier League for a long time for a club of our size. And West Ham will consider themselves to be a bigger team than Fulham. They've got more fans, got a bigger stadium, even if they don't own it. And they obviously won a European trophy recently. So pushing people out of the club, you get a lot of angry people at football, don't you? You get a lot of angry people. And I've been to a load of stadiums and you see how vitriolic it can get. And they turn on the players and the manager and eventually they turn on the board, which is where West Ham are at now. You know, they're targeting David Sullivan and Karen Brady and they want them out and they want Nuno Espirito Santo out. And they don't like half of their team. They're scared that Jared Bowen might leave. There's a lot going on at West Ham in particular from Clack's perspectives. And there are a lot of overly entitled fans who just always feel like they should have this, they should have that, they should have wins, they should have success, they should have the brand of football that they want. And we can't all have everything. Like, some of us have got to lose. like, I do have some sympathy with West Ham because I do think that their board have made some terrible decisions. And I think David Sullivan is outdated in the game, right? That's fine. But I just think that they have turned on the team in some moments when they shouldn't have, and they should have shown more patience and realised what they had. And I take the point, Clack, under David Moyes. I know what you're getting to, and I appreciate that. And that's what I feel as a Fulham fan too. I feel like if Fulham lost Marco Silva as manager, there's a good chance of us going down because he's built something himself. What we've got at Fulham right now is because of him, not anyone else. It's because of him. And if you back him more, you'll get better things from him because he's a great coach. So whatever level you're at, be careful what you wish for in these stadiums. Be careful who you boo and how loud. Don't turn on your team. Support your team. Support them. Right, last one. It's from Jorge. He says, fruit should not be on desserts. Fruit should not be on desserts. Wow. Okay. Where do we start with this one? So, obviously, you could have chocolate desserts. But fruit absolutely belongs on desserts, doesn't it? You've got to have that balance. And what if you don't like chocolate? Or what if you just want something? You want that sweetness at the end of your meal? Look, I like a strawberry cheesecake. Are you going to deny me that? No, you're not, are you? My mum loves apple pie. You going to take away her apple pie? I hope not. Lemon tart, banana split. You get some great desserts that involve fruit. I'm afraid I'm not. I don't like this. You're declaring war. This isn't just a hot take. This is a declaration of war. And I bet there's a lot of people out there in the rank squad that aren't happy with a take that says you can't have fruit on your desserts. Not having it. Maybe we need to branch out. We need to get Ranks FC away from football and just start attacking all these other subjects in life. And I'll tell you what, that is something I've thought of doing before. And maybe 2026 is the time to start the spin-off podcast. Thank you to all of you that have listened today. Happy New Year. I hope you had a great 2025. And I hope that you celebrate the end of this year and the start of the new year as you mean to go on. Keep your spirits high. I know we're not all having a great time of things right now. The world's a difficult place to be. Everything costs a fortune. We all go through ups and downs. So I hope that we are able to give you something to look forward to every week. We really, really appreciate all of you being here every single week. You're the best football community in the podcast world. So thank you to all of you. Spread the love. Tell your friends to come and listen to Ranks. We would appreciate that for 2026. Take care, everyone. We'll see you soon.